Recording in progress. We're back.
We're back.
It does feel like a while. Maybe that's it because does. It's been a while. I don't know.
It does feel like a while, but I think it's only an extra couple of days.
I think you're right. And I haven't seen any films at the cinema, at least, since we last did the podcast. I think I've been watching probably more TV. Yeah, I did finish off Traitors, thank the Lord. By the time I watched it, of course, I did know who won. And I'm just literally on the last 15 minutes of the last episode of the Netflix drama One Day.
Oh, I've finished it.
I'll tell you.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Leo Woodall and Amber.
It's so watchable, isn't it?
And I've heard so many people say that the series is so much better than the film. And even some people say it's better than the book, where Dexter and Emma meet for the first time at their graduation at Edinburgh University. And then they go their separate ways, but actually they become friends over time, really strong friends. And it's funny, it's charming, it's romantic. Oh, but it's a tearjerker at the same time.
But there's also lots of very cool 80s nostalgia. It's got an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah,
there's lots of stuff in there of 90s culture.
Yeah.
That you're warm to.
I know, it's quite funny because when they go through the dates and I'm sitting there going, what was I doing? I was at uni then, or I was doing this then. I was still at school then. They're really old. That's what I was going through my mind. No, it's a brilliant, brilliant series. I highly recommend it as well. What episode are you at the moment?
I'm on the last episode and I actually stopped the last episode because I was looking at my watch. I thought, I'm not going to get this in before we have to start the podcast. So I'm literally halfway. Well, I think I've got 14 minutes exactly left of the final episode. And you're right. There are highs and there's some serious lows.
Yeah. It's funny because I watched a little bit of the last episode with my breakfast before I started work. And then I had to stop it because I thought, get myself together. I'm about to go on a meeting, for goodness sake, at 9 a.m. I can't be look like I've been crying or anything. So no, really, really good. I watched Migration with Elizabeth Banks, Danny DeVito, and Kumaki Nanjiani as well. It's about a family of ducks who want to migrate to a warmer climate. Basically, the kids seem to like it. So if they're happy, I'm happy. So that's fine. There's been some cracking TV series definitely on. So One Day, as you mentioned, is on Netflix. True Detective Night Country is on Sky Atlantic. Really, really good, but also a little bit eerie as well. Jodie Foster and Callie Reese are in this. This is the fourth or fifth series from this. And I didn't realise that Matthew McConaughey and I think Rachel McAdams have been in a series before, in earlier series. But it's really good to watch. You even got American Christopher Eccleston, American accent he's got in this. And it's just really strange seeing him with an American accent. Set in Alaska, and there's basically just trying to solve a murder mystery. But it's there's some kind of supernatural goings on, potentially. I'll leave it as that. Mm-hmm. And then Criminal Record is on Apple Plus. It's Peter Capaldi and Kush Jumbo. Now, Peter Capaldi's character is a little bit dodgy, we suspect. I haven't seen the whole series yet, so I'm sort of halfway through. But Kush Jumbo's character, DS June Lemke, is trying to uncover a sort of police cover-up, really, with this. So I highly recommend. I seem to be watching a lot of sort of detective TV series at the moment, but One Day was a joy, a very mixed emotions TV series. But yeah, highly recommend all those.
Well, I saw Ready Player One for the second time round. I watched it with my son. I finally got around to doing it, which is great. Nice.
So did that he was like nice. It?
Yeah, no, he absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. That's about it. So we've got Argyle and Natural Born Killers are the two films we're going to review. But we've got a quiz first, as usual.
Quiz. Now, I'm a bit worried it's going to be about Tarantino or something like that, is it?
You're lucky.
Oliver Stone?
No, it's not on Oliver Stone.
All right, okay, go on then.
It's actually on Woody Harrelson.
Oh, okay.
And it's a blankety-blank quiz.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
What do you mean,
terrible?
Oh,
I was terrible last time.
I think you will do well with these. Okay, right. We'll start off with what I think is quite an easy one. These are all Woody Harrelson movies, and it's just replace the blank to complete the title. So this is a 1992 film. White men can't blank.
Jump.
There you go. Knew that was coming very quickly.
That's an easy one. Yeah, okay. That's a good one.
All right. 1993, 1 year later, blank proposal.
Indecent.
2 out of 2. Okay.
I forgot he was in that, actually. Yeah.
Okay, 1995, blank train.
I want to say money train. Can I say money train?
You can, and you're right.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
That was a complete guess.
My word. Okay. 2007, working our way up. This is question number 4 now. I mean, you should get this. No country for old blank.
Men.
Okay.
I knew that was going to come up somewhere. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just going to be 5 out of 5. And now I've said that, I'm not going to get it right.
This is for 5 out of 5. This is 2013. Now you see blank.
Me.
Yay! 5 out of 5!
Oh, my first 5.
First 5 out of 5. There was
amazing.
There was another one which I didn't include, which I think you'll get as well because it's just too easy. The blank games. I thought, no, I'm not going to ask for that one. That's too easy. And I also know that you like your Hunger Games movies.
I didn't realise I knew Woody Harrelson that well.
So, there you go. That's a first. 5 out of 5.
From the Cheers days.
I know. I was actually looking at his filmography. He's been around for a long time. He really has.
He was very young in Cheers, wasn't he?
I used to love Cheers. I used to absolutely adore Cheers. Yeah. Fantastic.
And it's what I find baffling. I know you can play some dodgy characters sometimes, but what I find baffling is that something, I think, was his dad something to do with JFK or something like that?
Really?
Something to do with the shootings of JFK. Anyway, I just find I'm baffled that he sometimes comes across as this dodgy geezer. And you just kind of wonder whether his dad's a bit of a dodgy geezer or not.
I think I'm going to dig into that. Well, what do you want to do first? I mean,
shall we go with Natural Born Killers?
Yeah, before we do Natural Born Killers, before you set Natural Born Killers up. Now, I was watching Natural Born Killers, and I was about 45 minutes into it, and I messaged Sarah.
Oh, because
I genuinely, don't worry, you did reply. I was like, is this my film or is this Sarah's film? Because it's very gory. It's very gory.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I was like, I thought, well, this must be mine because Sarah wouldn't go for something like this. But I don't remember picking this. So, wow. I had to just like confirm that it was your pick.
I watched this at uni, my first year at uni. And I did come out of it thinking I was really kind of wired after watching it. And
said,
I think it's because it was so loud in the cinema and it was just, you get all these little snippets of different types of media thrown at you. And it's Tarantino was the best, you know, director around at that time as well. I think I was kind of like, yeah, that's cool. But I might have changed my mind slightly since. I think get that vibe with my 40s.
Okay,
so.
All right. Well, I'll leave it to you to tell us all about it.
So, Natural Born Killers, released in 1994, directed by Oliver Stone, and writers include Quentin Tarantino. And you can tell it's written or influenced by Quentin Tarantino, definitely. But in slightly different style, I think, for Oliver Stone. But we can just talk about that. But yeah, I did get a slightly different vibe in my now being in my 40s to how I perceived it when I was younger. I don't know whether it's because I was just watching it on telly as well, not on the big screen and with loud music. And the music didn't resonate with me much either this time. I don't know what I was on. I obviously had too much. I can't say Coke. That's the wrong thing to say. Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola. Or there are other brands, and popcorn probably. So I was probably on a sugar high. But it was very much introducing and glamorising mass murderers Mickey and Mallory Knox, who were played by Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis, through media and led by a reporter played by a very young-looking Robert Downey Jr. as well. Yeah, he looks completely different to how you see him today as Iron Man, or previously as Iron Man, because, you know, I'm not going to give anything away if you haven't watched the Avengers series. But they've had horrible, troubled upbringing, both of them. And especially Mallory, experienced, you know, a lot of sexual abuse as well from her revolting father, played by Rodney Dangerfield. And then other men would be revolting around her as well. And these two just came together and led a life of crime. And we catch them on the run and they're in a cafe. And then it comes obvious, you know, who they are. And then they start shooting the place down, people around them. And if they get a bit, if anyone sort of glances an eye or does something not quite in their favor, they'll just shoot them. It's very gory, very bloody, isn't it? So, and even you have this Indian character in this movie that doesn't do anything wrong. He knows Mallory and Mickey are, you know, not quite to be trusted. Surrounded by rattlesnakes in the middle of the desert, there was a crime committed there as well, which shouldn't have happened, basically. I think you have to be really in a certain mood to watch this film. And I think, you know, I'm going to leave it as that because it's actually quite simple, really. It's they're just people on the run and they're, people are being highlighted in the media. You've got these young teenagers thinking how wonderful they are. There's people like going, Mickey or, you know, Mallory. And whenever they hear them or know that they're around, for example, they're like celebrities. And I do know that they were loosely based on Charles Strackweather and Carol Fugit, apparently a young Nebraska couple in the 1958 who went on a mass murder spree, apparently. But you also can consider them as a bit like Bonnie and Clyde as well. But I'm going to leave it at that. Rob, love to get your thoughts.
Well, I think I probably remember it in the same way that you remembered it. I mentioned it before. I think I had the poster to this film up in my wall, and it was like a super, super cool movie. Tarantino's influence and Woody Harrelson, I suppose, was still that kind of not new kid on the block. He'd obviously come out of Cheers and done the odd film, but he has that kind of crazed face, doesn't he? He's quite unique. Mm. It worked really well for this. I forgot that Robert Downey Jr. was in it. He plays this TV journalist who has his own prime time show where he does these exposés on criminal serial killers. And so he's obsessed with getting the scoop on these two and eventually does manage to get to them. He has a very strange accent in the film. It's kind of half Australian, half American.
And it's supposed to be Australian, I think.
Maybe it is. But if that's the case, it's an awful accent. It started to grate on me. As soon as it started, like you say, it's got a very kind of loud soundtrack. I'd almost describe it in some ways as kind of almost psychedelic to a degree. There's lots of images of news images or news videos.
Wolf that's... as well. In windows, there's wolf in a windows. Or
that's right. He kind of embeds this stuff into the scenery as well, so it's kind of quite creative. Or you might have, they might be driving down a road and it's kind of a night sky, but then it pans up and there's some kind of visual or hallucination scene in the sky, and it's just chaos. It's chaotic. And just like the two characters, I think once you get past the fact that, okay, this is quite an interesting take on the media's obsession with serial killers, which is kind of what it's all about, really. Once you get past that, it didn't quite keep me as engaged as I remember it did when I first watched it. I think because probably when I first watched it, the impact of the style of it was relatively, not relative, it's not new, but for a mainstream film, you don't see too many films like it.
Yeah, that's true. And
this time around, well, I couldn't remember exactly what was going to happen. But yeah, I lost interest slightly in the two characters. And I must admit, I didn't think it aged particularly well. I watched it thinking, I know why this was so cool to watch. You can see it. You can see it in the direction, the cinematography, what Oliver Stone's doing. It's really interesting. It's manic. The characters are manic. Loads of dialogue. It's kind of got that cool Tarantino vibe. So I get it. Watching it as a 48-year-old on the TV at home, it didn't quite have the same pull. And I must admit, I forgot just how graphic it is with the violence. In actual fact, my favourite part of it, or the most interesting part of it, was the scene when it's almost like, you know, midway through this Bonnie and Clyde highway adventure they're having, they make a stop, they wander off, and they end up in this kind of Native American little camp, and they sit down in his home with his son, and there's a pet rattlesnake, and it all becomes very strange. They're obviously inhaling some kind of drug, you assume, because everything goes a bit odd, and the guy starts to unearth a bit of the history of Mickey that really sends him into a bit of a spin. And it's only really at that point do you see any vulnerability slightly with his character, and even with Mallory's character as well, because they both have an interjection there about, you know, some violence that they didn't really want to commit but happened. And it's the first time you almost just see them have relatively normal moral reactions to anything in the film. And it touches a bit, as I say, on his past. So I found that really interesting. Although at the same time, it's still very odd. And I hate snakes. And I forgot there was a big... I mean, it makes me go a bit funny now. There was a big rattlesnake sequence in this, which I found extremely difficult to watch. Well, I didn't really watch it, to be quite honest. It was horrible. They were just everywhere. Yeah, so I would say the first half of the film I enjoyed. The second half, as it kind of descended into complete chaos, as eventually they end up in this big jailbreak at the end, and the news reporter, played by Downey Jr., becomes more and more integral to the movie. In actual fact, the more he came into it, and the more he starts to kind of lose his mind as well, it just lost me at that point. I wasn't quite as interested. But I think the biggest takeaway for me from it was actually not necessarily the acting performances, because I think they were very much of its time, those characters and that story. I think I was most impressed probably with what Oliver Stone was trying to do with the film. So, yeah, I think that's probably about it.
I'd say Quentin Tarantino, I mean, as I said, I think there's similarities between Pulp Fiction and this film. I think Juliette Lewis was kind of similar to Uma Thurman in some respects, she was dancing and her character is a little bit kooky. And also it started off in the cafe, which didn't Pulp Fiction start off in a cafe as well. So just like there's a connection there.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. When I was watching that sequence, I thought one's influenced the other, without a doubt. Yeah. Because that was a very much Tarantino. In fact, I thought the opening and the beginning of the film was very Tarantino-esque.
I would agree with you. I think some of the footage that they put in the background with, you know, with wolves and coyotes, and looks a bit dated, to be honest. And they even had Coca-Cola polar bear breaks. And Oliver Stone put those in because it's a way to soothe the audience from the blood and gore, apparently. That's why he put it in.
Well, and I must admit, when that sequence came up, it was a welcome little break, to be quite honest. It kind of did its job. Even though I didn't know what the hell it was all about, I kind of enjoyed it.
What was funny, though, is Coca-Cola said, sign the right license for allow them to use it. But then they didn't realise in what context it was going to be used. And then they weren't very happy once they saw the movie with their brand in this sort of very gory film. So that's kind of backfired on them a little bit. And then the scene with Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Wayne Gale, interviewing Mickey in the prison was very much similar to an interview that was conducted with Charles Bronson, apparently. So they sort of borrowed that as well. But yeah, I think you have to be in a certain mood. I think also I remember at the time there were some real shooting incidents in the US where some people did get sort of brainwashed or hypnotized by this movie. And then they went off and I think they were on drugs as well, and they went off and killed a load of people. And Oliver Stone and Time Warner at the time had a court case on this and were blamed for putting these teenagers' minds into this kerfuffle, basically, to go and kill these people. But obviously, I presume they won. But knowing how I felt when I came out of the cinema, I can see how it influenced some people that were potentially influenced easily, let's just say. Yeah. I think it is almost like a brainwash. You get so drawn into the music and the snippets and everything. And because Quentin Tarantino was hot stuff with his... Pulp Fiction came out the same year with this as well. I can't remember which way around. I think Pulp Fiction was first and then this came out. But I don't know, what are you going to give it?
Well, I was just also going to just make one other final point. if you're making a movie about two serial killers who cause so much bloodshed that stir up the media to the point where the whole film is really about the media's obsession with this kind of thing, I do think it walks a bit of a moral tightrope, because the ending of the film doesn't really feel right for the message that you think it should ultimately be sending to the audience, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It didn't feel particularly morally satisfying.
What are you going to give it then?
I will give it 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. I've been toying. I put 7 out of 10 at first. I think I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10. I know it was my movie, but it's just so different to how I remembered it. And I actually haven't watched it since 1994. So quite a while.
I think I need
30
to...
years. Oh, my goodness.
I know. It is a bit crazy. Years.
Anyway, I wouldn't put anyone off it. I think you should have a watch, have it, build up your own opinion of it. But for me, at my age, with my maturity nowadays, I think it's not for me anymore. But there's so many other movies and TV series that got loads of blood and gore, like probably equally as much now as this film now. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to change my mind. 6.5. I agree with you. I know I'm doing
basically, we're a bunch of old farts. Yeah. We're not young and hip anymore.
It's just too violent. It's too violent for a Sunday evening now, AJ. Right. Okay, so on to our newbie. And this is Argyle, a movie that stars Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, amongst many others, directed by Michael Vaughn, who you'll know from Kick-Ass and the Kingsman movies, amongst others. And this is the story of Ellie Conway, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, who's this author who specializes in spy novels. And she's on the brink of completing her fifth book, centered around its star, Aubrey Argyle, who is played in the movie by Henry Cavill. And he's basically the protagonist of the whole series. So as she talks and about her book, or she reads excerpts from the book, we see it play out with Henry Cavill as Argyle. So while en route to visit her parents on a train, she meets this random stranger, a fan of her book, called Aiden, who's played by Sam Rockwell. And before she knows it, she's in the middle of this ambush. There are these fights breaking out, and fanboy Aiden gets involved to protect her. And he turns out actually to be a real spy and saves the day and reveals to Ellie that there's this sinister organization called the Division that's targeted her because her novels seemingly predict their actions. So Aiden accompanies Ellie to England, hoping that the upcoming chapter in a book will provide insights on how to bring down the Division, which leads them on this mission to find the crucial master key, which is again referenced in her novels. However, Ellie grows suspicious of Aiden and his own motives, and so she reaches out to her parents, Ruth and Barry, played by Catherine O'Hara and Bryan Cranston, for help, who happened to be holidaying in London at the time. However, when she arrives with Aiden hot on her heels, she discovers a secret that brings her whole identity into question and sets her off on a spy mission of her own. So I will leave it at that. If I go into any more detail, it will sound even more ridiculous than it has just sounded. And I don't think I've given too much away.
It's a dun-dun-dun sort of moment, isn't it?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the film also stars, there's other stars in this. So John Saner, who plays Argyle's friend and spy partner in the novel. And then we have Samuel L. Jackson, who plays this CIA deputy director, and a femme fatale, Dua Lipa, who also provides the title music to the movie. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to hand straight over to you, Sarah, for this one.
So yeah, you've got all these stars, and you've got the director. Is it director and writer of Kick-Ass and The Kingsman? What could go wrong, really? We laugh because I thought the concept wasn't that original. I think we've had movies or TV series where somebody's written something that's become real. I can't wrap my brains what I've seen out there, but that, I'm sure that's not very original. But what is original is the editing, I thought, was quite clever. How 1 minute she was talking about she was thinking about who was protecting her, and then the next minute it was, or she was, Henry Cavill's character, for example. And that was very cheesy. It is very cheesy, this film. So you have to go into this film and watch it with a very open mind. And there are so many twists and turns. I watched this with my family, that my youngest actually started to lose track, and I could see him starting to mess around. And he's 12. It's a 12A, this film. But he was starting to, I could see he wasn't as engaged as he would be.
I'm not surprised.
So many twists and turns.
So many twists and turns.
But I love Sam Rockwell. I've always loved Sam Rockwell. He plays Aidan Wilde, as you mentioned. And he gets really stuck into these fight scenes. But I find it really odd watching Bryce Dallas Howard doing fight scenes, because I don't think I've seen her in that. All right, she's been in Jurassic Park, but I don't think I've seen her do, you know, proper fight scenes before. And it just looked a bit odd for me. But I haven't seen Bryan Cranston outside Breaking Bad, so great to see him as a bad guy again. I hope I'm not giving too much away there. Catherine O'Hara, back in the day, she was in Home Alone and obviously in Beetlejuice. So great to see her. So you brought back some of the old classic actors into this film, and ones that are up and coming as well. I would say Bryce Dallas Howard is up and coming. Dua Lipa is trying to make it into the filming industry, obviously. You got John Cena. You got these big butch kind of actors that are starring in this. And even got Richard E. Grant was in it as well. I just found it incredibly cheesy and playing out these scenes of the book. And right at the start, I just thought, oh, I wasn't sure whether it was real or not. And you can tell, obviously, it was something that was happening in the book. It was just so, the chase scene was just so badly CG'd, or
there was something not quite right about it. Cheesy.
It just wasn't right, was it? No. It just seemed very wrong. But it was supposed to, I think it was supposed to be like that.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, and then the animated cat, the cat jokes were quite funny. And she would carry this cat around with her because she was a cat obsessed Ellie Conway. But we find out later that she has a slight difference in character. I mean, my youngest struggled with it, as I said, but my eldest actually loved it. He's 14. Whereas my husband and I were like, we're not sure about it. And I was expecting a bit more because I loved Kick-Ass and I loved the Kingsman. But I know some of the other Kingsmen have gone sort of downhill a bit.
Yeah,
maybe.
The first one was good. But
it was, and there was a couple of characters that you've from those movies that are in this film as well. And there's a Kingsman kind of ending. So they've got their stamp on it on Argyle. But yeah, just kind of, it's a big blockbuster movie. Spent lots of money on CG, I would say. Lots of great edit. I thought some of the editing was really well done, but it's probably not for me. I don't think I'd be watching it in a hurry again.
Yeah, I think we're both pretty much on the same page with this one. There were times I watched it thinking, is it supposed to be this bad and cheesy and clunky? Is this like some new genre that Matthew Vaughn is creating where it's kind of knowingly cheesy? And at times it was fun. At times some of the set pieces were genuinely fun and you just slip, you know, you just enjoy it. But then there's a twist or something happens or multiple twists and you're still drawing breath from the fact there's been about 50 twists. And am I even interested in this anymore? You've got Henry Cavill really camping it up. Now, I think that's the thing. A lot of the characters are camping it up, especially him.
Yeah.
With his smiles and winks to camera.
Dodgy hair.
I mean, there's this crazy scene where you've got Ellie and Aiden in this warehouse trying to figure out how to kill these baddies. And Ellie used to be an ice skater in her day, apparently. And so they deliberately fire apart these oil canisters and you get this massive slick that engulfs this entire warehouse. And she creates these kind of gates with her shoes, I don't know how she does it. And she starts skating around. And it's a bizarre sequence. It's so bizarre that in actual fact, you kind of think, okay, if people just watched that one scene, then it's actually ridiculously weirdly daft, but in quite a non-offensive, perfectly charming, strange way. And I kind of think, if that's Matthew Vaughn, if that's what he's going to do with this series, then I don't really mind it. But it, on the whole, it almost feels like someone's come up with like this concept for a film, the book thing, and they thought, oh yeah, that'll be really good. And then they just tried to cobble a story around it.
I don't think it's original, though. I think it's been played out before.
It's not particularly original either.
Yeah.
I tell you what I do think is commendable. Normally, a leading actress who's playing an action hero type character, you'd normally have an actress that's far more slim and svelte than Bryce Dallas Howard is. I'm not in any way making any comment about her figure. I'm just saying that her figure was just a normal figure. But I think it's unusual. And I actually thought, well, that's quite refreshing. How many times? I mean, what about that film we saw recently with Chris Evans and Ana de Armas?
Yeah.
Now, I remember watching that thinking, Ana, she's skit. I know, like, you're supposed to suspend your disbelief, but there's no way she could do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just, it's a kind
Bryce
of...
Bryce is a bit stronger. She looks, yeah. Bryce Dallas Howard looks a bit stronger.
Yeah.
However, I have noticed, because I watched the BAFTAs a couple of days ago, and she looks like she's lost a heap of weight. So I'm wondering whether she was actually, because I know she's had children, I wonder if she was actually just come off having a baby after this film. I don't know.
That might be the case. All I'm saying is I just thought it was refreshing that I liked her in this, and I thought she was great, thought her character was good. I thought Henry Cavill was absolutely fine because you didn't actually see him that much and he was just totally camping it up. Sam Rockwell, I do love. I actually thought he was potentially a bit miscast. I didn't really buy their chemistry, to be honest, as a couple. And yeah, it's just a whole load of daft, weird nonsense, which I would say at times works for being so awful it's good. But on the whole, just felt like a bit of a crazy, twisty mess of a film.
Yeah, I would agree. So I'm going to give it 6 out of 10.
So am I. There we go. So, wow, what a week, hey?
But do you know what, though? It's interesting. We've had the bad guys killing a load of people, and then we had the good guys killing a load of people. Neither are good. But they're probably killing as many people as each other in both films.
Do you think there's going to be more of these?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Yeah, so do I. So do I.
It's almost I think the reviews...
The ones that hate it, like really hate it, and the ones that like it, I think just think it's okay. So, and I reckon the people that like it are probably Matthew Vaughn fanboys, or fangirls, and who just love all this cheesy, kind of slightly camp stuff, which is fine. As I say, you can see elements of this that you've seen in other Matthew Vaughn films, absolutely. But the film and the story and the characters is just not as solid at all as films like The First Kingsman, Kick-Ass. I mean, obviously, did Layer Cake. He did an X-Men film as well, and Stardust. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing crass about it, thank God. Not like, I think some of the Kingsman films towards the second one, I think some of it's just a bit crass, but at least there wasn't any of that in it. It was all just kind of daft fun.
And it's 6 out of 10 on IMDb. It's kind of a meh.
Yeah. Kind of, I mean, they must have spent a lot of money to get that cast.
Yeah. My son liked it, though. My oldest liked it. So maybe it's geared for him, you know.
It's going to float some people's boat, that's for sure. Exactly. And it's hard to say. It's not crass. It's not offensive.
No.
There's no bad language. There's nothing like that. So, you know, it is a bit of fun. And like you say, some people will like it and some people won't.
Exactly. It's not for me, though.
nor me. If you couldn't tell, it's not for us.
Brilliant. So next film we've got is Spaceman.
Yeah, I was waiting to hear that on the trailer that I just watched. So yeah, we're going to review a film that has been causing a bit of talk that's coming out on Netflix on March the 1st. We're not sure if it's going to be in cinemas at the same time, but that's on Netflix March 1st. It's called Spaceman. It stars Adam Sandler and the wonderful Kerry Mulligan. And I think the reason why it's causing a bit of interest is because, you know, we don't often see Adam Sandler playing serious roles. And when he does, think back to Punch Drunk Love, Uncut Gems, we know he's a decent actor. And the trailer for this is really quite intriguing. So I'll read you the blurb. Jacob Prochazka, orphaned as a boy and raised in the Czech countryside by his grandparents, overcomes his odds to become the country's first astronaut. So yeah, there are other big films that are coming out the next few weeks. Obviously, we've got June 2, which is going to be a biggie. I think that's coming out at a similar time to this. We may not get a chance to see that before the next podcast. And we've also got A Quiet Place
Day 1, yeah.
Which will be the third film in the trilogy. Yeah.
Can I just say, Carey Mulligan, 3 films in 1 year.
I know. She's everywhere, yeah.
So she was at the BAFTAs as well for Maestro, yeah. But she's been in Saltburn, now in this. What's she got coming up? She must have plenty coming up as well, no doubt.
She's got a couple.
She's grabbing it now.
It does seem to be a bit purple patch. This often happens, doesn't it, with actors? They roll out 2 or 3 films and award-winning films or have their kind of moment. I think sometimes it happens because they wrap on filming for a film and it gets buzz within the industry before it's even released. And so they become almost hot property because the industry knows it's going to be a big film. So they want those stars for their film.
She's got 4 other films coming out. One is a voiceover, then One for the Money, Wildwood, An Uncivil War, and On the Other Side.
Mm.
But I can't see who else she's playing alongside at the moment. But yeah, she's hot property at the moment.
She is.
Good for her.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the newbie. The oldie, you are picking from
I'm picking from yours.
List.
And do you know what? I think, because I've been conditioned, having watched Natural Born Killers to True Detective to Criminal Record, I think I'm up for a bit of a thriller or horror.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to say a romance or something there. Okay. I thought you were going to say something like really chilled out. Oh, no, I want a thriller or horror.
More. Give me more.
Okay. All right. I will.
Thriller, horror.
Okay. I've got 10.
I'm going to go for your number 1.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I've got to watch this again. Okay.
Well, you can change it.
No. I mean, it's there for a reason. It's the Blair Witch Project. This.
Yeah, I can't believe I've got to see this as well.
Do you know what? This is, when I first watched it, and I've only watched it, funnily enough, I've only watched it once because I found it that harrowing. I'm already a little worried about, I have to watch this with somebody, without a doubt. I can't watch this film on my own, but I will watch it. So if look at me, I'm already in a bit of a panic about it.
You can come over to ours and watch it. We'll all watch it together. That'd be hilarious. Should we do that?
I think maybe
let's
we
do
should.
It. But then maybe. You have to drive home or walk home.
I wouldn't want to walk home after this either.
You've got it on your list.
I know, but it's there because it should be there, right? Because it did the job. Okay, so 3 film students vanish after traveling into a Maryland forest to film a documentary on the local Blair Witch legend, leaving only their footage behind. Ooh!
I think we're going to have to watch this together.
Oh,
it'll be hilarious. I'll probably be hiding behind a cushion or something. It's streaming on Sky.
It might well be a bit of a kind of a Natural Born Killers thing.
I'm wondering.
Just think it's daft.
Yeah. We might have a couple of glasses of wine whilst we watch it as well.
A couple of glasses of whiskey, I think.
So it's streaming on Sky and now cinema, and you can rent or buy off all other on-demand channels that I can see.
Can't wait.
Gives me the willies.
I'll probably be worse than you watching this, I think.
I don't know. I did watch it at the cinema, and I think certain things I always look down. And I never go, I don't watch scary films at Halloween time these days. I find it too intense.
Well, you're fine with them at any other time of the year, are you?
No, because I don't normally watch horror movies.
I don't normally watch horror movies either. I mean, yeah. I don't even classify The Shining as a horror film, because I actually just, I like the film. I know there's bits in it, but this, but on the whole.
Well, let's see how we get on. I think we should watch this one together, maybe. Be quite funny watching it together. We're like, oh. Right, the Blair Witch Project, there you go. And what was the other one? I can't remember. Spaceman.
Spaceman and Blair Witch Project, there you go.
Cool, sounds good. And end of a Tuesday evening we're recording today. I haven't got much else. I've eaten, I've done everything, really. Just go to bed.
So, I've got a whiskey here, and I've got 14 minutes left of one day to watch the final episode.
What I find interesting is they backtrack a little bit at the end, which I don't think they necessarily needed to do.
I'm through the sad bit.
But they reflect a lot of the bit at the end.
Yes. I think I've started to see a lot of that reflection.
Some of the reflections, But okay. Excellent series. I highly recommend it. Brilliant series. And I hope they both do, because they seem to say, I think Ambika Mod, she was brilliant in that TV drama. She was a midwife. This is going to hurt. She was brilliant in that and really moving as well in that. And I don't think I've seen her in anything else but other than that. But Leo Woodall is new to me as well. Very handsome, very charming, very dashing. But he slightly messed up, isn't he, in this TV drama?
Absolutely. I didn't even know there was a film. I knew it was based on a book, which obviously I haven't read, but I didn't realise there was a film as well.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway's in the film, I believe. But I might go and watch it just as a comparison, or would it ruin it for me? I don't know.
The thing is, once you find a TV series and you like it, it kind of takes over your life until you finished it. That's what I found.
I'm wondering when those, the writer strikes, I'm wondering whether, are we now seeing the productions that were held back during the writer strikes, or are we now seeing, are they yet to come, the films and TV series?
No, I reckon we're right. I reckon we're probably seeing quite a lot. I mean,
we're starting to see them now.
There's probably still to see more come out to kind of catch up with it all. But there must have been a lot that were on the back burner that may even have been ready to release. Or there might have been some that were just finishing up, and then some that were, midway through filming. You just don't know. So, yeah, I reckon you're right. It does seem to be an awful lot that's landing on, certainly on streaming.
And then the movies that are coming out in March as well. They're all pretty good.
Okay, well, let me go and finish off this wonderful series. And
enjoy your whiskey.
Yes, I absolutely will.
And, your wee dram.
I was going to say I look forward to these two films. I'm not quite sure if I am looking forward to
watching. We will sort out a night for you to come and watch Blair Witch.
Okay. Brilliant. All right, then. See you next time.
Thanks, listeners. Bye. Thanks, Rob. Bye.